Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Lamud Amud Bet by the two dots. All right, now we get to the final section of the Mishnah, which is Amar Shimon Gamliel, Lo Ayu Yamim Tovim L'Yisrael Kechamisha Zar Be'av Ukuyom HaKippurim. There were no better days for Klal Yisrael like the 15th of Av and Yom HaKippurim. So Gemara says, Bishlomo Yom HaKippurim Mishum Di'it Beis Licha U'michila. But that day we understand why it is, because Bnei Yisrael were forgiven on that day. Yom Shenitnu Bo Luchot Achronot. That's the day in which Moshe descends from the mountain with the second luchot, and Bnei Yisrael are granted forgiveness for the Egel, and they're given the second luchot. So that we understand why that's a very auspicious day, because it's a day in which you have Slicha u'michila. And that's why today we have Yom HaKippurim, and why it's considered to be a day of Slicha u'michila is because of this that took place on that day originally, which is Moshe returns with the luchot HaShniyot, and they're granted Slicha u'michila, and that's a good reason to be happy. It's a good reason to assume that that is an auspicious day. Now, how do you get to that calculation? Rashi does the calculation over here. He says that Moshe Rabbeinu went up on the 7th of Sivan. He descends on the 17th of Tammuz, that we already did in the Gemara, because that's one of the things that happened on the Shivasar B'Tammuz, which is that Nishtabru Aluchot. And then there's a question about when he ascends the mountain again, when he came down from the 17th. Rashi over here discusses that he went up on the Yudchet. He went up on the 18th of Tammuz, after he ground up the Egel and punished the Poshim, he goes back up to Shemaim on the 18th of Tammuz, and then 80 days later is Yom HaKippurim. Because the calculation is, you have 12 days left in Tammuz, which is a Chaser month, then you have 30 days of Av, which is Malay, 29 days of Elul, which is Chaser, and then 9 days of Tishrei, that gets you to 40 days, plus since on the 18th he only went up in the morning, he has to wait till on the 10th in the morning to make it a complete 40 days. And that's how Moshe came down on Yom HaKippurim 80 days later, and that's learned out of the Psukim in Devarim, that he went up for 40 days when he had a difficult time, and he was praying for Bnei Yisrael, and then the latter 40 days where he received the Torah the second time, which was a time of Slicha u'michila, when he finally descends on Yom HaKippurim. Now, in isolation, or in a vacuum, the Rashi makes a lot of sense, and it's very easy to understand what Rashi did. The calculations are fine. The problem comes up with the fact that we have a practice that we say from Rosh Chodesh Elul until the 10th of Tishrei are considered to be the quote-unquote 40 days of the second Luchot, as well as those are days of Yemei Slicha. And therefore, the Sfaradim get up every morning and they say Slichot during the month of Elul. We blow the shofar. We do other things that Elul has that consideration because they're part of the last 40 days. The way it turns out, in Rashi's calculation, that's not the case. The last 40 days start on the 28th of Av, and not in Rosh Chodesh Elul. Rashi does not address it at all. Tosafot, in other places in Shas, actually discusses the issue. Tosafot in Shabbat, on Daf Pei Tet, as well as Tosafot in Bava Kamma, on Daf Pei Bet. In both those locations, Tosafot discusses how you calculate the 40 days. And he's trying to accomplish two things. One is the idea that it's the Rosh Chodesh Elul is a significant day. Number two is that Moshe descends on Yud Tishrei, on Yom Kippur, as well as the fact that the reason that we read the Torah on Monday and Thursday, according to Tosafot, is because Moshe went up on a Thursday and came down on a Monday, meaning that those were days that were auspicious because of the 40 days, and they happened to deal with the Thursday and a Monday. So that's why we say long Tachanun on those days. That's why those are days that we fast on for Bahab, because those are significant days in terms of Matan Torah as well. In order to do that, Tosafot runs into a lot of problems, and he says the calculation is very difficult to get all of these things to align. And therefore, Tosafot makes a suggestion that maybe Elul was Malay in that year, that Abru al Elul, that they made Elul 30 days in that year, because he's trying to deal with this issue of trying to make everything work out and get the 40 days and land on Yud Tishrei, in addition to the fact that the Tanchuma, Midrash Tanchuma, says that Moshe went up on the 19th of Tammuz and not the 18th. So that definitely creates a problem, and therefore you would have to have Elul be Malay in order to get it that he came down on Yom HaKippurim. If you want to see them, there's a Tosafot in Bava Kamma, Daf Pei Bet Amud Aleph, and Tosafot in Masechet Shabbat and Pei Tet Amud Aleph, as well as in Bava Batra, there's a Rashbam there on Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. You can look at all of them, and they try to do these calculations, and doing these calculations, it's very hard to get all of these items to match up. The Monday, Thursday, Rosh Chodesh Elul, Yud Tishrei, as well as the day that Moshe sends the Har in Tammuz. So Rashi, again, does a simple calculation here, but doesn't work out perfectly with all the other ideas, and that's what Tosafot's trying to reconcile over there. Now, the Gemara wants to know, Ela Tu B'Av Mahi. What is significant about Tu B'Av? Now we're going to have a list of items that the Moraim give as to what was significant about the day of Tu B'Av. Again, the Rishbam mentions it in Baba Batra, that there's no fact that it was on Tu B'Av. That's a Mesorah that we have that was on Tu B'Av. It was the day in which the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry between them. My Darush, what was the Drasha? Zed Davar She'etziva Hashem Livnot Tzlafchad. When Bnot Tzlafchad inherit their father's property and they are women, the Shevet Yosef comes and complains about the fact that their Nachalah is going to get changed over to another Shevet if they marry people from outside of their Shevet. So Moshe says that Hashem tells them that they must marry people from their Shevet. They end up marrying their cousins. But that din only applies because Zed Davar. Zed is a mute. So Davar Zed Lo Yeh Noheg Elo B'Dor Zed. That was only true in that generation. In the subsequent generation, then the Shvatim were allowed to intermarry, and it wasn't a problem anymore, especially for women who inherited land from their father. And that happened, the Gemara says, on Tu B'Av, and therefore it was a happy day, or auspicious day, because the Shvatim were allowed to marry between themselves. Amar Rav Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shutar Shevet Binyamin Levob Gal. It has to do with Pilegesh B'Giva, the story of Pilegesh B'Giva, where Bnei Yisrael came out to wipe out the entire Shevet of Binyamin. Now they have a problem because part of the Shua that they took when they went to battle against Binyamin was that nobody would give their children or their daughters to the people of Binyamin. So now we have a problem because we have these men left over from Binyamin and they have no one to marry because they're not allowed to marry anybody from Bnei Yisrael. They actually gave them some of the women of Yavesh Gilad, where they wiped out the city there, gave them some of the women, but it didn't suffice. So therefore they gave or came up with a way to be matir the Shevet Binyamin to marry others, which is Shinemar, Bish Israel Nishba Mitzpah Lemor, Ish Memen Loiten Bito the Binyamin Lisha. No man would give his daughter to Shevet Binyamin for a wife. My Darush, what are they doing? Where are they duration there? Amarav Mimenu Velomi Banenu. We will not give our children or daughters over, but our sons will not be bound by that Shvuah. So again, that was the way that they where Mati read was that the Shavuah only applied to that generation, to those people, but by the next generation, that was not the case, and therefore there was a heter for Binyamin then to remarry or marry within the other Shvatim at that point in time, and that's what the celebration was on Tu B'Av, as well as the fact that the Gemara describes in other places that by Shevet Binyamin, they told them to come and to watch the women dancing in the vineyards, and they should grab their wives because they weren't allowed to give their daughters as wives, but if Bnei Binyamin took them, then it wasn't a problem with the restriction. And so that's how in the Shoftim they dealt with the issue of the Bnei Binyamin, at least in the first generation. But in the second generation, where it was Mutar, that happened on Tu B'Av. Amar Rabba Bar Chanan Rabbi Yochanan, and some have a Girsa of Rabbi Dimi Bar Yosef, Amar Rav Nachman, Yom Shekalu Bo Meitei Midbar. The day on which the Meitei Midbar, the people in the Midbar, stopped dying. So this Rashi over here brings a Midrash that says that every Tisha B'Av throughout the time that they were in the Midbar, every Tisha B'Av they used to go and dig their graves, and they used to lie down in their graves on the night of Tisha B'Av, and then in the morning, they used to say, Yibadlu Achayimim Mitoch HaMeitim, and everybody who had turned 60 passed away and stayed in the graves, and then everybody else got up from the graves and went away. And they did this every year. In the final year, in the 40th year in the Midbar, they did this, and they got up in the morning and nobody died. So they thought that they had the wrong day, because nobody died that time. So they waited, they did it night after night, until they reached Tu B'Av when the moon was full. Once the moon was full, they knew that they for sure had the right date, and people weren't dying, and that was the celebration that people had stopped dying, meaning that the Meitei HaMidbar, or the people that died in the Midbar, were done or finished. There was no longer anybody dying. Question of why that was a celebration is interesting, because in that case, the way that Rashi brings the Midrash, nobody had died since the previous Tisha B'Av. So Tosafot over here brings alternatives to the Midrash, even though they don't agree with the Yerushalmi that Rashi is quoting over here. Nevertheless, the Rashbam says, Komem Shanim lo ayu meitim elo b'tik tebav. They only died in Tisha B'Av. V'chol tebav ayu meitim kaf ha'levu prutrot. 21,000 plus a little more in order to eliminate all those people within the age of 20 and 60. Then, umefereish hatam be'oto prutrot ulo demem shanim tebav elef. And those extras add up to 15,000. V'yesh mefarshim shayu meitim b'chol yom achrov ha'meitim ayu l'olam Tisha B'Av. So Tosafot brings another answer, which is that Mechamisha Asaba Paskag Zeral Metu Klal Vasu Yom Tov. So Tosafot brings one answer here, and Baba Batra expands on these two answers that he brings over here, which is one answer is that people died all year long. Just the majority of them died on Tisha B'Av. So therefore, in the 40th year, people were still dying all year long. Just on Tisha B'Av, it stopped that year, and then they waited and they saw for the additional time period until they reached Tu B'Av when they knew that for sure they weren't dying anymore. And that's why they celebrated, because that was the end of the dying. That's one way to explain it. Or the other way to explain it is that generally they died on Tisha B'Av, and they even died on Tisha B'Av of that last year. Or a third way to explain it is that they were supposed to die on that last final Tisha B'Av, but Hashem granted a waiver to those individuals on their last year that they didn't die on Tisha B'Av. So even though they were supposed to die, they didn't die. Now, oh, that's interesting, because Tosfot premises it on the 40 years in the Midbar. The problem is that the Chet HaMeraglim, as we know, takes place in the second year, while they're in the Midbar. So they're only really 38 years, not 40 years. So it makes it a little difficult in all these calculations that Tosafot does. But those that say that they died on that final Tisha B'Av, the reason they waited until Tu B'Av was because that was the Avelut. If someone had a relative that passed away on Tisha B'Av in that final year, then the 7 days of Eilut would terminate of Mikzat Yom Kikulu on Tu B'Av. And that's why the celebration was on Tu B'Av, according to those that say that they still died on that final Tisha B'Av. So there are different ways of laying out what happened here. But for whatever reason, that was the termination of the Gzeirah of those of Meitei Amidbar. And that they know, either know for sure, that terminated on Tu B'Av. And that's why it was a day of celebration. Shenamar says, Vehi kashir tamu kanshiyam elchama lamut, v'idaber Hashem elai. So Gemara determines from here that when it says that after all those people that were supposed to die, 20 to 60 in the Midbar, then Hashem speaks to Moshe. Elai haya dibur. At that point, Hashem spoke to me, which is, Gam amar, ashelu chalu meitei Midbar. From the time period that the people had not died from who were supposed to die in the Midbar, lo ya dibur in Moshe. Hashem did not speak to Moshe. Now that doesn't mean he didn't speak to him at all. It means that he never spoke to him either peh al peh, or he didn't speak to him in a gentle manner. And that Moshe only gets the speech or the talking from Hashem or the instructions from Hashem b'zchut Klal Yisrael. So the fact that Klal Yisrael was in a position of nidui also put Moshe in that same position, and therefore Moshe does not have a dibur. And if you actually look in the Torah, those years are missing from the Torah. If you look in Sefer Bamidbar, from the time of Miraglim, except for the Adat Korach, which is Machloket Rishonim when it took place, there is no stories between the time of Meitei of the Miraglim until the 40th year. So I mean, those 38 years are actually missing from the Torah. And it's actually possible that Hashem didn't speak to Moshe at all during those 38 years, and that's because we have no Diburim during that period of time between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So but the Gemara here correlates between these two items, which is that once the Meitei HaMidbar stopped, then Moshe was Zochet to get the Hashrat HaShchina. So when Hashem was angry at Bnei Israel, he didn't get it. When they were forgiven, and when that was they were freed of that decree, then Moshe gets the direct message from Hashem. And that's what it says here, V'deber Hashem Elai. Eli had the dibur. That was when kasher tamu kansheyam in chama lamut, when all the people had died that were in the midbar. The one explanation that the avelut terminated on Tu B'Av, that's the only one that gets you really to Tu B'Av. Otherwise, it should have been earlier. I would suggest that, in general, 15th or the middle of the month is a turning point in the month, and so if we say that the beginning of the month is inauspicious, then we'd say that the latter half of the month becomes the time that's auspicious. So even though maybe the Gzerah terminated on Tet B'Av, nevertheless, that they only celebrated, only made a day of celebration at that turning point of the month, which is Tu B'Av, which is for the latter half of the month. And that might be why Tu B'Av becomes that pivotal day, because literally it's the middle of the month, and that changes, or that's the bridge or the fence between the inauspicious half of the month and the more auspicious part of the month. Now, the Gemara continues with other reasons. Ula Amar, Yom Shibitel Hoshea ben Allah Prusdaot Shoshivi Ravam ben Avat. Hoshea ben Allah eliminated the guards on the paths or the roads to Yerushalayim that Ravam ben Avat had stopped the people from being Ola the Regel. He took them away. So those Shoshivi Ravam ben Avat on Drachim Shalo Yalu Yisrael the Regel, he eliminated them. Vamar Leizer Sheyirtze Yalu. And he says, wherever you want to go, you can go. Meaning that he didn't say they should go up to Yerushalayim, he just didn't stop them from going up to Yerushalayim. Now Hoshea ben Allah is no tzaddik. It was definitely a Rasha. And it says there in the Psukim, in Malachim Bet, Vayasara Beinir Hashem, Rak Lo Kemalchei Yisrael. He did bad in the ways of Hashem, in the eyes of Hashem. He just wasn't as bad as those that preceded him. So that's what the Gemara Dashan's over here. What is it that he did that he wasn't as bad as them? Is he eliminated the guards, and he didn't stop the people from being Ole the Regel. Now, Hoshea ben Allah is at the end of Malchut Yisrael, so he doesn't really have a lot of choice, because basically Malchut Yisrael is being dismantled at that point in time, and Malchut Yehuda is going to be the only surviving Malchut from that point forward. All right, Rav Matna Amar, Yom Shnitnu Arugei Beitar de Gvura. It was the day on which the Meitei Beitar in the Bar Kokhba revolt were allowed to be buried. The bracha of tov v'meitiv was nitkana and added on to benching on that day where they allowed the people of Beitar to be buried. Atov shelo isrichu. The tov was that even though the bodies were laying out there in the hot sun, they did not rot, they did not decompose. V'meitiv was shenitnu l'kvura. So that's the idea of tov v'meitiv, was to giving thanks to Hashem that in the end they were brought to proper burial. But proper burial, well, they were still intact, and that they had not decomposed. Why that's added into benching, Tosafot over here has an interesting statement, difficult statement, but he says, Mipnei shardavi shehayu kamo geder bekerem velo nisrichu. Says they were like a fence around the kerem, and they did not rot. I mean, that's how high the bodies were piled up, and despite the fact, they did not rot. So there's an association with kerem and yayin, and since we bench ala kos, that's where they put the bracha of tov meitiv together with the kos of benching. But the day of Yom Shnitnu Harugei Beitar L'Kvura was, again, a difficult situation, which was the Mered Bar Kokhva was ended with the destruction of Beitar, but here there's a glimpse of good that comes out, a glimpse of positive comes out. And if you truthfully look at all the items that are mentioned here, they're all associated with something negative, and then a positive that comes out of that. So all of these items, in the first place, were something bad or negative, and then on Tu B'Av, there's a transition into something that good that came out of it. Of course, some of the good is just because it was bad before and now it's good. But you see in there that transition, or what I would call it the ray of hope. Even in the depths of destruction, the depths of Avilut, there's still hope and there's still this ray of hope. And in each of these items, there was something good. And in this case, the Harugei Beitar Nitan L'Kvura. Technically, 7 days. Because Beitar is conquered on Tisha B'Av. Right? That was one of the 5 things that happened on Tisha B'Av. And they were Nitan L'Kvura on the 15th. You're talking about the summertime. You're talking about the middle of the summer with the blood flowing up to the knees. I mean, that they said there were rivers of blood flowing out of the city, and the fact that they didn't rot, that's pretty significant. Rabba v'Rab Yosef d'Amrei Tavayu, Yom Shepaskum Nechrot Etzim L'Maracha. It's the day on which they stopped cutting the wood for the Mizbeach. Right, the Tanya, we have a Breita. Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Michamisha Asar Ba'av Ve'elech Tashash Kocha Shel Chama. From the 15th Av onward, the sun is not strong anymore. And they do not then cut wood for the maracha, because they're not dry enough. So either they're not dry enough, meaning that they don't burn well, or Tosfot says they're not dry enough so they don't get wormy. And if you have wormy wood, then it's pasul de mizbeach. So they stop taking wood from that point in time because the sun doesn't have the power to dry the wood out anymore from that point forward, and therefore it's not wood that's appropriate for the mizbeach. What this has to do with celebrating on Tu B'Av probably has to do with the next statement, which is Amar Menashe, Bikarile Yom Tavar Magal. It's the day on which they break the axe. It's the day where they stop cutting. So it's the day of breaking the axe. Mikan Veilech. The Mosif Yosif. The one who adds on will have be added on to. The Delom Yosif will go with Tosafot's gear. So over here, Yasif. The one who does not add on, Yasif, will be Yasif. My Yasif. What does it mean that he Yasif? I'm Rav Yosef Tikbere Yimei. His mother will bury him, meaning that he will die early. So now what is meant by this, as Rashi explains over here, from the point of the 15th and Av onwards, the nights start to become longer than the days. In addition to that, we stop cutting the wood. So therefore, a person now has more free time. With that more free time, because they're not cutting wood, in addition to that, the nights are getting longer where they didn't work, then a person has to start learning Torah at nights. Starts to add on to their learning of Torah at nights. And that's what it says here. The Mosif Yosif, the one who adds on to learn Torah at night, Yosif will live a longer life. La Mosif, the one who is Batel Mina Torah, even though he has more time on his hands now, Yasif, his life will be cut short. So the celebration here at Tu B'Av is exactly that pivotal point in which we switch over from the days of work to the days of learning. And that's why it's a day of celebration, not because it's the day where you stop cutting wood for the Mizbeach, but that also is a day of transition. When they stop cutting wood for the Mizbeach, it's a transition where they start to learn more Torah, and they also had more time at night to learn Torah. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, Shaban Benot Yushalayim. The end of the Mishnah says, on those days, Benot Yushalayim should go out and dance. Tanu Rabbanan. Bat Melech, the princess, who doesn't need to borrow clothing, nevertheless, Shoelet Mi Bat Kohen Gadol. She borrows clothing from the daughter of the Kohen Gadol. So even though she didn't need it, she borrows it. But because of her stature, she still borrows it from someone who is, like, next in command. So you have the king, and then the next is Kohen Gadol. Bat Kohen Gadol, the daughter of the Kohen Gadol, Mi Bat Skan. She borrows it from the Skan Kohen Gadol, the daughter of the Skan Kohen Gadol, Bat Skan, and the daughter of the Skan Kohen Gadol, Bat Meshuach Milchama. She takes it from the daughter of Meshuach Milchama, the Kohen who goes out to battle and speaks to the troops on the way out to battle. Bat Meshuach Milchama, Bat Kohen Ejot. She takes of a daughter of a regular coin. Of Kol Yisrael, Sholim Zemizeh. And each person borrowed. So no matter what their stature was, they all borrowed the clothing. Kedei Shalit Bayesh and Mishain Lo. In order that nobody be embarrassed because they don't have, because everybody borrowed, therefore there was no differentiation, because everybody had clothing and everybody had nice clothing to wear. Kol HaKelim Tonim Tvila. All of these Begadim required Tvila. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Afilu Mekupalim Unochim Bekupsa. Even if they weren't worn, they were folded up and put away in a drawer in a closet, you still have to put them into the mikveh. And again, Rashi explains over here, because Shalol Levayish. It's because somebody, not everybody was Tahor, and therefore they put them all in the mikveh to make sure all of them were Tahor and not to embarrass anybody. So it doesn't matter whether it was worn or not worn, every piece of clothing went into the mikveh in order not to differentiate. Benot Yisrael, Yotzot, Vecholot Bikramim. Benot Yisrael go out and they dance in the vineyards. So now we have a bright Tana, Mishen Lo Isha, Nifne L'Sham. Someone who didn't have a wife would go there to pick out his wife, because you have the women dancing there, and then you get the choice of the choicest women that were there. Miyuchasot Shebehen Ayuomrim Bachur. That was what our Mishnah says. Now we have a bright that expands on what the Mishnah says. Tana Banan. Yififiyot Shebehen. The beautiful ones among them. Mayuomrot. What do they say? Tnu Eneichem LeYofi. Look at the beauty. Sheni Shai LeYofi. A woman's only there for her beauty. Miyuchasot Shebehen. Those that came from good families, Mayu Omrot, what would they say? Tnu Neichem LeMishpacha. Look at the family. A woman is only for the children. If you're from a family of Miuchasim, that will also make your children more wanted by others, whether they're boys or girls, other people want to marry them. Michurot Shaban. Those that were Michurot, I guess Michurot means they were both not pretty, and they were not Miuchasot. Mayu Omrot, what did they say? Kchu Michem L'Shum Shamayim. Take your wife, L'shem Shemaim, Uvad Shiteachrunu B'zuvim, as long as you adorn us with the jewelry. So meaning that you just need to take care of us. As Rashi says, Milta Ba'alma Hu Damri. Just something that they said. Just give us nice clothing, take care of us, and we'll be good wives. So again, the idea being that every person has something to offer, has something to focus on, and therefore they're trying to attract the attention of the men that are there with that which they have to offer. Amar Ula Bira, Amar Rabbi Lazar. Altir HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasot Machol LeTzadikim. In the future, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make a circle for the Tzadikim. V'hu Yoshev Beinehem B'Gan Eden. And he sits amongst them in Gan Eden. V'chol Echad V'Echad Mar'eh Be'etzba'o. And every one of them can point with their finger at a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenamar. So the Pasuk says, V'yamar B'yomahu. They will say on that day, Hinei Elokeinu, Zeh Kivinu Lo. There is our God that we have waited for. V'yoshieinu. And then he will save us. Ze Hashem kivinu lo. This is the God that we waited for. Nagila v'nismecha b'shuato. Let us be glad and celebrate and exult in his salvation. The Gemara here is darshaning the word ze. The word ze, the Gemara always thinks in the Torah, means that you can point and see it directly. Therefore, when the Torah says, Achodesh hazeh lachem, the Gemara says about that Moshe and Aaron had difficulty with the Levana b'chidusha, and therefore Hashem took out Levana b'chidusha and pointed to it and showed them it. Also by Kriyat Yamsuf, it says Ze Keli Van Vehu. So the Midrash says over there that Afilu Shivcha Shalayam, even the maidservants on the Yam, was able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it says Ze Keli Van Vehu. They were able to point to Hashem. So here the Gemara also uses the word Ze, and therefore the word Ze they see as being pointing, the ability to point to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now I'll just point out something here. I think this, why this is the conclusion of Masechet Tanit, we'll see in 1 second, but it has to do with the aspect of Achdut, which is, what is described here as a Machol Tzadikim. Machol is a circle. A circle has three properties to it. A circle has a property which is, number one, it delineates that which is inside the circle, and that which is outside the circle. Number two property of the circle is that every point along the circle is equidistant from the middle. Number three property of the circle is that every point on the circle has another point that's directly opposite on the circle. And I think that is very important here based on what the Pasuk and what the Gemara is saying here about the Midrash. What the Pasuk is saying is, the Gemara is saying over here is that a circle represents that there are many different ways to approach Avodat Hashem. Now, a circle delineates what's on the inside and what's on the outside. Not everything is proper Avodat Hashem. And not everything can be considered the proper derech. But there is a circle. There is a delineation. But anybody who is within that delineation is considered to be an Oved Hashem, even though they're different from each other. So there is a point at which you're considered to be an Oved Hashem, a point where you're not considered to be an Oved Hashem. But once you cross over that line, There are many different ways to approach Hashem. And that's what it means here, that there are a circle and they can point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. They can point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu because every point along the circle is equidistant from the middle. So that means that even though there are many different ways to be over to Hashem and many different approaches to Hashem, they're all equal and equally proper in Avodat Hashem because every point along the circle is exactly equidistant from that middle point. And so that makes them all valid ways of being over to Hashem. What's also important here is that everybody on the circle has a point exactly opposite them in the circle. And over here in the Pasuk, it actually says the word Zed twice. So when it says the word Zed twice, the first time that they point in Zed, they point to a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the middle. And that's the idea that Hashem, that everybody who's an Oved Hashem is equidistant and is valid in their Avodat Hashem. But then it says Zed again in the Pasuk. And the Zed again is because when you point to Hashem, you also are pointing at the point that is exactly opposite you on the circle. And that means that you're validating the people that are just exactly opposite you and exactly different from you. And that's what it means, that every tzaddik will stand around and they'll point to Hashem and say, that's Hashem, that's the Shekhinah. But they'll also point to the point in the circle that is exactly opposite them and say they are valid as well. They are also Ovdei Hashem. And that's the important aspect here of the circle, which is the validation of the different approaches. But more importantly, the validation of the people that are exactly opposite you and exactly different from you, that they also have a valid approach to Avodat Hashem, and that there's an importance here and a premium put on Achdut, on the unity of Klal Yisrael. And that many of the things that we mentioned here with regards to Tu B'Av and the ideas that are associated with the unity of Klal Yisrael, those are the days or the happy days of Klal Yisrael. Latid Lavo, Kodesh Baruch Hu says, when they stand around Machol the Tzadikim, that's a day of happiness because that's a day of Achdut, as we just described here. So too, with regards to Tu B'Av, and with regards to Yom HaKippurim, they are days of Achdut. If you look in the Chazarat Shatz, in Musaf on Yom HaKippurim, there in the Chazarat Shatz, when it's describing the nature of the day of Yom HaKippurim, it says, Yom Shel Slicha Mechila, Yom Kapara, and it says there, Yom, also that is a day of Ava V'Re'ut. It's a day of love and unity amongst Klal Yisrael. Alright, it's a different shir why that's important, why Yom Kippurim is a day of Avav Reyut, but it's clear that it's defined as a day of Achdut and unity amongst Klal Yisrael as the day of Yom Kippurim. And same with Tu B'Av. Some of the reasons here we saw with regards to Tu B'Av were also about this idea of unity of Klal Yisrael, especially the ideas by Pilegesh B'Giva and the fact that the Shvatim could marry into each other. So we see that these days are important, or these days are days of Simcha because of this idea of Achdut and the unity of Klal Yisrael. And that's what's going to be Latid Lavo, that the Tzadikim are going to stand around the Machol and celebrate with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that's the aspect of unity amongst Klal Yisrael, and that's our power. And again, that should be our Tzchut, that in these difficult times, that we should all unify, have the Achdut that was shown over the last period of time in Eretz Yisrael should continue, and should bring us the Tzchut to merit in the Binyan Beit HaMikdash B'mehera B'yameinu, and to be Zoche, to see and point to the Shekhinah ourselves. And with that, we conclude Masechet Tanit, Aron Alach, V'Shloshu Pakim, Uslikala, Masechet Tanit.